Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 23 of the iPhone Podcast. Just a quick note, for show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. Because this is our last show of 2010, we are going to discuss the biggest stories of the year, make a few predictions for next year, and list our favorite apps of the year. Once again, we do apologize for the lapse in episodes. We had some scheduling conflicts and were unable to record. But please stay tuned, because in 2011, we're going to have a pretty set schedule and we'll have lots of iPhone and iOS news to talk about. My name is Gary Ng. I'm from the iPhone. I'm from iPhoneinCanada.ca, and I'm here with Justin Louis. Justin, it's been a while.
Yep, it's been a while. It's been a fun first year with the podcast and a big year for Apple. So let's get to this.
Okay, year in review. What can we say? Let's start off January 27, 2010. Apple started 2010 off with the announcement of their long-rumored tablet, the iPad.
Yeah, it's amazing. It seems longer ago. I actually added that to the lineup right at the last minute. I almost completely forgot that it was this year with the iPad. If you remember way back in January 27th, it was actually met with a lot of negativity. A lot of people thought it was just a big iPhone. Most of the big prognosticators kind of didn't think it was going to do that well, and here we are almost a year later, and it's become a phenomenon. So pretty amazing to think what they've done just in 1 year.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. And I mean, now the iPad has set the standard for tablets. The developers who make apps for the iPad have impressed a lot of people. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what the next iPad 2, if you want to call it that, will bring. So eventually on April 3rd, 2010, Apple releases the iPad. I ended up picking one up. I think it was on launch day. One of my friends was lucky enough to drive down, and he ended up bringing one back for us. And I was just amazed at how great the experience was with using the iPad. The screen, the size, I think people all over the U.S. lined up for this thing, and it definitely was in short supply as well, as with any Apple product launch.
Which, again, was a little surprising, because people, the thing you kept hearing over and over again, there was a little bit of a disappointment with the lack of much new. In many ways, it was just a big iPhone. And then the other thing is, people kept, all you heard about for a year leading up to the iPad was, yes, Apple makes great products. I'm sure if they bring something out, it'll be great, but there's no market for it. Nobody's clamoring for that. There's people have their laptops or their phone. They don't need it. And now that it's come out, people realize it is that third product, like Steve said, and it fits in most people's lives. And if you think about what it launched at less than a year ago to what it is now, just seeing what the developers have been able to do with it, I could see in a few years it almost completely replacing the computer. I could almost see, I'm tempted now to actually go away from a MacBook, get some heavy-duty 30-inch iMac as a desktop, and then just use an iPad, and that's going to become more and more possible as these developers keep doing amazing things with the apps, and of course Apple will keep adding improvements. We should see a new one pretty soon. So again, they've leave it to Apple to kind of invent a whole new product category, and can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, this is a really unique experience, because like Apple said, they just created this new device in this new category, and people have embraced it, and it's become the standard. But let's move on. In April, our friends, the people from Gizmodo, they end up getting their hands on an iPhone 4 months in advance. Now, the interesting part about this story was that leading up to this full-blown Gizmodo review, in Gadget and Mac Rumors, they had posted some blurry pics that someone had leaked that of the next iPhone. And eventually, in Gadget, Gizmodo, at the end of April, they post this full-blown review with pictures and everything of saying that this is the next iPhone. A lot of people were doubting that this was the next iPhone, but eventually, it turns out this was the iPhone. It was quote-unquote lost in a bar by some Apple engineer named Gray Powell, and the rest is history. Gizmodo ended up getting one of the biggest scoops, I would say, in the past 10 years. This is huge.
I was going to say, in a lot of ways, this is kind of the story of the year. In some ways, it almost trumps anything Apple did officially. As you mentioned, there was those blurry pictures that started to leak. Nobody was buying those. Then even when Gizmodo first posted it, almost nobody believed it. Everyone was like, it was so radically different than the 3GS. It had the gaps from where the antenna was. It had the two different buttons that people said, oh, that's not an Apple type of thing. So it was, even though they had this thing in their hands, it would have been the greatest fake ever. And we, of course, learned that it was the actual phone. But if you remember early on, nobody believed it. Even Gizmodo, I think when they first posted it, said, we highly doubt this right now. And then they posted like hours later or a few days later saying, no, now that we've had time to tear this thing apart, we believe it to be the phone. But it was so different. I just remember being so excited. I loved the look of it. But you always had that little bit of skepticism just because Apple doesn't usually make mistakes like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when I first saw this, at first you want to be critical and think critically about this. And, I had my doubts. The design was totally different from what Apple would go with. But, obviously it was the actual phone, which I think it's incredible that it was something like this could happen and leak out. Gizmodo also ended up explaining how the phone was lost. And eventually, there's a whole issue with the reviewer getting his house raided by the cops and getting all his computers seized. And, but we don't know if this was, maybe this was some sort of planned stunt that people are in on, but this dominated headlines around the world.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I meant to mention that it was not only initially this huge story because, of course, it's the iPhone and everybody's excited about this dramatic new iPhone, but then it just became a story for months as the police were involved. And even before the raid, there was all this question of where it came from and all these rumors of who took it and how it went. So it probably was the story of the year, both from the tech angle and then all the legal wrangling that happened. It was pretty amazing.
Yep. And then afterwards, we have June 7th, Apple announces the iPhone 4 at the Worldwide Developer Conference. And, it was a pretty neat introduction to the phone. Seeing Steve talk about the innovative antenna that held the Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, GPS, and the GSM bands. And how thin the phone was and this all new design. It was amazing. I think the phone looked great. Apple showed the internals of the phone, and what got me was how big that battery was and how this, it was using that A4 chip from the iPad. Two mics, I'm surprised that they went to two volume buttons though. It's so unlike Apple to add more buttons.
Yeah, it's very unlike Apple, but I like them. They're very, the feel of them, it feels like a bit better build quality. I take care of my phone, but so I don't ever have an issue, but I knew several people who had broken the volume button and broken that little plasticky kind of mute switch on the old phone. So it's definitely a stronger, better design. I think the thing that sticks out most for me on the June 7th press conference was that Steve Jobs was able to still create such an exciting announcement. It really was set up to be a pretty big disappointment because you knew everything, but even though they had their hands on the phone, they weren't able to figure out that band around the outside was an antenna. So that was a pretty mind-blowing announcement that you weren't expecting. And then the Retina display, again, because they couldn't get the phone really operating, they couldn't get it to launch, they had mentioned that it seemed to be higher res. But then when Steve actually explained it, and then you started seeing the pictures from the bloggers do it, and then when we eventually got it in our hands, the Retina display to me was the exciting thing that day and continues to be the highlight of the phone for me.
And let's not forget the FaceTime announcement.
Oh, yeah, FaceTime.
I think with the iPhone 4, this is the perfect time for first-gen iPhone adopters to get their first iPhone because this iPhone packs the biggest punch. We have FaceTime, which obviously video calling is not new, but I don't understand why other companies haven't tried to take an initiative to set up some sort of standard video calling feature. But Apple has implemented it really intuitively and seamlessly for it to work across Macs and other iOS devices. You know, there's also the 720p high def recording, the 5 megapixel camera. It's a jam-packed phone.
You're right. You were smart to bring up. I forgot about FaceTime for a second there. It is a big thing for Apple this year, especially again when almost everybody, including I think both of us, predicted that it wouldn't be much of a feature, that it's a bit of a gimmick and people wouldn't use it. Mm-hmm. And the more you talk to people, you find people using it. It's more the everyday people. I have, again, friends and family who use it. I've used it significantly more than I thought I would. It's still not an everyday thing for me, but it becomes very handy to talk to someone out of town you haven't seen for a while or try to show somebody something. And the fact that it's just so easy to use. I was watching a podcast the other day and the guy was actually interviewing Steve Martin, who then they connected via FaceTime to be able to do their video podcast. So it's just something that he said, oh, you have FaceTime? And within a couple seconds, they're both up there on FaceTime and then recording it. The Mac app, again, so easy to use. Skype and these other things you kind of have to set up. These, you just click one button and you're connected a couple seconds later. So I think Apple, again, sort of proved that when they set their mind to something, they're most likely going to do it right and capture people's imaginations.
Yeah, it's just, I completely agree. I mean, I've used FaceTime many times with family and friends that I haven't seen in a while, and it's every time I do use it, I'm blown away at how simple it is to really connect. You know, there's nothing to it. You just tap an icon and you're up and running. Moving on. The iPhone 4 is released in the US on the 24th of June. And within days of this release, though, YouTube videos started to pop up that showed the iPhone losing signal when held a certain way. Now, these videos went viral, and the terms Intenegate and Death Grip dominate all of Apple's coverage. Steve Jobs ended up replying to someone with one of his Steve mails, and Steve told this particular individual to quote unquote, just don't hold it that way. And that was a catchphrase that dominated headlines in the summer.
Yeah. And along with antenna gate and death grip, these weird terms became a big thing again. Not to pat us on the back. We get a lot of things wrong and some things right. I think you and I were both pretty quick to say that we thought this issue was pretty overblown, and it turned out to be that way. Think about back in June, it was a disaster. People were talking about suing Apple for hiding this. It was going to be the end of the iPhone, and it's by far their biggest selling phone ever. It didn't hurt. They couldn't keep the thing in stock. The only thing that held back their sales were lack of supply, nothing to do with this issue. And now you don't hear anybody discuss it. We've been using the phone for 6 months or whatever it is now, and the issue, you just don't see it happen in real life, unless, again, maybe you're in a really bad signal area. But even those people, you don't seem to hear. I think Apple maybe even internally maybe has done some tweaking. It's funny that something that just dominated the news for almost 2 months, now you say Intenegate, you almost begin to forget what that was. It just was a non-issue now.
Yep. And then obviously on July 16th, Steve Jobs holds a mini press conference about the iPhone 4 antenna problems. And this press conference ends up shedding some light on just how much Apple spends on its sound testing studios. It went on to show like the death grip working on rival smartphones such as a BlackBerry. I think there was an Android device or Nokia, an LG, I don't know, just other smartphones. Also show that, you know, this antenna death grip was also an issue. I mean, even in Nokia manuals, they tell you not to hold the back of the phone because that's where the antenna is placed. I just think the issue here with the antenna gate is that it was just so easy to let the signal drop by putting your finger on that one spot. And I was even able to try this myself at a AT&T store when the iPhone was out in the States, but not in Canada yet. And I was able to get, you know, lower signal bars. But I don't know if that was limited to AT&T in the States, but as of right now in Canada, you don't even hear about antenna gate anymore. It's not an issue. By the time the phone came out in Canada, not many people had these antenna issues. Let's not forget that Apple did offer up the free bumper case as well.
Yeah, that was, to me, the strangest story of the year. That was such an un-Apple-like event, start to finish. They don't normally hold these one-off press conferences. They're usually these big, several times a year, planned out things where they launch things. So that was weird. It was strange to see Steve Jobs come out on such the defensive, backing up their stats of how good their customer service is and how low the reported things were. And then again, showing four or five videos of these other phones having the whole thing. It was just very bizarre. You don't see Apple doing that. But then again, a lot of people were saying, oh, that was a low point for Apple. Obviously they're concerned. They're so defensive. And then it just seemed like a few weeks went by and it kind of faded in. And there was even several other Android phones and BlackBerry phones that had this issue again. So initially people said, hey, Steve Jobs, he's just full of crap. He's saying that it affects other phones to try to kind of defend his product. And then it sort of happened that other phones did suffer from this. And I think maybe finally we can put the whole iPhone versus AT&T thing to bed. I've been hearing since the day that iPhone came out that is it AT&T's fault or is the iPhone a problem phone? And I was always the believer that it was an AT&T issue because these phones work perfect in Canada. People in the UK and other countries report the same thing. So I think now it's finally known that AT&T has to get their stuff together because the phone is not the problem. It's the carrier.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how the iPhone 4 or if the iPhone 4 is released on Verizon in the States, it will be interesting to see if people are able to drop their signals just as easily as they can on AT&T. But that will be something to talk about on another day.
Yeah.
Now, June 24th, the iPhone is released. July 30th, iPhone 4 is released in Canada. As usual, the carriers here, they waited to the last minute to announce availability and pricing. This iPhone launch again overwhelmed Rogers Computer Systems, which is slowly becoming an annual tradition. And for the first time, the iPhone launched on multiple carriers and was available unlocked from Apple. I had fun waiting in line overnight at the downtown Vancouver Apple store, met a lot of great people. And I mean, yeah, I felt bad for the people who waited overnight and they couldn't even get their phones activated because of Rogers. They actually had people who were buying unlocked phones, bypassing the queue and just allowing these guys to just go in and out with their iPhones. Eventually stocks were short as normal and stocks came back.
Yeah, July in general was a crazy month for the iPhone in Canada. We were really disappointed to not be in a launch country after being a launch country. The previous year, you kind of expected, hey, we're in that A group now and we'll remain there. So I remember the initial disappointment. But then we were able to launch after the antenna gate thing had sort of been sorted out and we knew we were getting the free cases. So that was nice. And then, of course, as we predicted for weeks leading up to the podcast, the stupid carriers wait. Literally, it was under 24 hours again this year. If I remember correctly, it started leaking out at about 10 or 11 a.m. the day before. There was the initial surprise of the phone being available for $159, which was shocking because there was even some rumors heading up that it might be a little more this time. So to be even cheaper than the U.S., to be able to upgrade for $159, I remember that being exciting news. Huge kudos to Rogers for giving excellent upgrade policy for existing people. I've now had 3 iPhones in 3 years and always paid the lowest price. But as usual, by waiting to the last minute and having it so many people there, it just became a disaster. I went at 6 in the morning, got in line. They opened it up at 8. I was first in line. And sure enough, I'm there till 3 in the afternoon because the systems are down or my account's not showing that upgrade pricing. So as usual, it was a disaster. But then looking back, I'm glad I spent the day getting it because it was impossible to come by for weeks. And still remains fairly hard in some areas, but it was flat out impossible for the weeks after the release. So spending 8 hours in the store ended up being worth it.
Yeah, it's definitely not fun wanting the next must-have device, but then not being able to get it in stock, or just like in your case, waiting for it to be activated. Let's move on. Throughout the announcement of the iPhone 4, Apple had mentioned that iOS 4.2 would be coming, how it would bring, it would be coming in November for the iPad. iPad users had been shut out for the longest time. They didn't have multitasking, didn't have a unified inbox, etc. Apple promises, and they did deliver it. November 22nd, iOS 4.2 arrived, and it unified the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and the iPad for the first time.
Yeah, and that's the story we kind of glanced over there with the release of the iPhone 4, and of course, you have the new operating system, and from the moment the first iPhone came out, I can remember getting the first generation iPod Touch. There was no apps, but even then it was an amazing operating system. Everything was so fluid. It was amazing to be able to kind of flick your finger and go page to page and zoom in with your fingers with the pinch. And cool as that was just to be able to do that, it blew your mind how smooth and how well it worked. And now here we are a couple years later, we're up to iOS 4, and now you have a situation where the Mac is about to announce, about to build in a lot of these features into the phone. iOS 4, it's my favorite operating system. I find every week goes by, now there's more and more things I do on the phone. When you first got an iPhone, it was sort of like, oh, it's amazing that I can check my email or I can do this on my phone. It's now getting to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I got to check my email on my computer right now. Like, there's tasks that I'm moving over to the phone. So I cannot wait to see what we might see for iOS 5. But right now, iOS 4 to me, the world's best operating system.
Yeah, I actually found that with the iPhone 4 and the Retina display, I've been using my iPhone 4 more than I've been using my iPad, believe it or not. I just find the screen on the iPhone 4 is just incredible, and my iPad has sort of taken a back seat. But let's move on. Let's talk about some predictions for 2011. Obviously, if Apple does, you know, indeed follow its product release cycle for the iPad, we will be seeing another iPad in the spring. What will this iPad come with? I mean, one would think that it would come with dual cameras to include FaceTime. One would also think that the Retina display would be also included. Possibly rumors of a smaller tablet, although Steve did denounce such an idea at one of his earnings calls. That was the latest earnings call, when he basically slammed BlackBerry and RIM for their lack of vision and their lack of a dedicated OS for their devices. I don't know. How would you improve iPhone 5? Obviously, you know, we do need a higher capacity. I mean, 16 and 32, it's ridiculous that it's been at those capacities for such a long time.
Yeah, that's a little weird, but I manage it pretty well. I think you're right about the iPad. There'll be dual cameras. That's a given. There'll be a higher resolution display, whether it's true Retina or not, we'll see. Basically, I think if you put out an iPad 2 right now and it has iOS 4, it has the dual cameras and the Retina, I think you have the killer device. Those things alone instantly make it by far the iPad is already the best tablet on the market, but then it just puts it out even further. But I don't see Apple just leaving it at that. They'll be bringing more stuff to the table. So again, I don't have any great predictions for that. I think the two cameras and the Retinas, it's a no-brainer. My two big points of interest for 2011 is, do you think we'll see a radically different phone design? Will the antenna go back inside, or has enough time passed and it wasn't an issue? You'll see a similar design. And will iOS 5 continue the trend of just slowly improving things, or do you think we'll see a radical change? I'm tending to think that we may see them stick with the similar design and a small upgrade, but again, nothing to that, just my gut feeling. What do you think?
I think, you know, if you take a look at what's happened in the past, I think Apple is going to slowly release their updates. Coming from the original iPhone to the 3G, the design wasn't that much. It wasn't such a drastic change. And going from the 3G to the 3GS, the internals changed. It was just a faster processor and video capabilities. So I honestly think, you know, they'll stick with the same design. Apple usually makes a move when they feel that their competitors are just about catching up and being on their level, quote unquote. And that's when they just, you know, drop the bomb and release a new phone. I mean, the one thing I would say about the iPhone 4 screen is that, you know, it is small when you compare it to these mammoth SUV sized Android phones that are coming out. Like, I mean, the Dell Streak, all the Droid X, all these phones, they have huge, huge screens. Now, the iPhone, you know, its screen is, I would say it's a perfect size to hold in the palm of your hand. But I guess at the same time, you don't want a screen that's too big because it's sort of entrenching on the tablet market, right? You want to keep the phone as a phone and not sort of make this all-in-one device that all these companies seem to want to do all the time.
Well, Apple has sort of proven over time they want to keep improving it, but they don't make rash decisions to try to compete. I can't see them going to a much bigger screen just because some people like the various Android Galaxy phones or whatever it is. The part that I find, again, the most interesting is if you look at every phone on the market, like the Nexus S or whatever it is, the big new Google phone that came out this week that everybody's raving about, it looks so similar to a 3GS. Everybody was copying that black plasticky kind of look, and then Apple went in a complete different direction. And I can't even, like, when I see a 3GS now, it was my favorite phone on earth, and now I barely like I don't like how it feels, I don't like how it looks. So I love the new iPhone 4 design. I'm just concerned with the antenna issues and some of the reports about the glass on both sides being able to break easier than maybe some other phones. I'm a little worried that Apple might go back to a more conservative look, but I hope they don't, because I personally just love the feel and the design of the new phone. So I hope it either stays similar or it keeps moving in that direction and they don't go back to the other design just to be safe.
Yeah, and another thing, I think Apple likes to stick with their, you know, designs because it ends up getting cheaper and cheaper for them to produce the phone over time. So for that reason alone, I don't think they're going to drastically change any of the designs suddenly. They're just going to, you know, keep on making the phone until there's a certain point where they need to start innovating and coming out with something new to sell to people who love iPhones. So that pretty much was, I would say, a brief overview of 2010 for Apple. There is also one other item they did announce, which was the Apple TV. And we could also throw in the iPod Touch 4th generation, updated with Retina display and FaceTime and HD video recording. But we could talk briefly about the Apple TV and how, you know, there's been extremely the Netflix integration with Apple TV. It's one of my favorites. And I think Apple TV is just, you know, it's sort of a sleeper right now. The capabilities of the Apple TV, I think, you know, with software updates, it's just going to get better. But as of right now, it's a very simple device to use. And a lot of people are jumping on it with this new AirPlay feature that's featured in 4.2. And we can only see more options once new iOS updates are released.
As Steve himself has said, it's still right now that interesting hobby. Everybody I know who has an Apple TV loves it. It's super well designed, super high quality. The AirPlay is really cool. And as you said, the iTunes and the Netflix integration are phenomenal. What it needs now is it needs some more content. If you can get things, it doesn't really count for Canada because we're so starved for attention anyways in that area. But if the US can get a Hulu app and a CBS app and an ABC app and have some more content, then I think it does become the killer device because it's cheap and it looks great. And those, hate to say the word, but those magical type of features like the AirPlay and those type of things, people do just love. I had friends of mine who had bought the Apple TV just because of Netflix, hadn't even really heard about AirPlay. Then when the 4.2 came out, I called them up and I said, oh, how cool is that AirPlay. And they're like, what? And then I told them, and within like 40 seconds on the phone, they're like, have it set up and are just cannot believe that they're sending pictures and video right to their TV like that. So it's, again, a great product that I think has the potential to be huge if Apple can either get more exclusive content and bring the price down in some kind of subscription thing, or allow ABC, NBC, Hulu, all those other producers to bring apps similar to Netflix, then you have the killer device.
Yeah, the content on Netflix has been getting better. They now have the seasons 9 to 11 of Top Gear, which is pretty cool. So that's something to look forward to. But what was I going to say about the Apple TV? I think it's just really easy to use. It's a very simple device to get set up, and easy to share content. People were talking about how, you know, the Google TV was going to, you know, be the next killer, but apparently the latest story that's out right now from the New York Times is that at CES next month in Las Vegas, this was supposed to be, you know, the big party for Google's, you know, software for televisions. But because of, you know, some of the issues and the glitches with the Google TV software, Google has actually asked TV makers to delay their introductions of Google TV integration. So this, again, just shows how companies such as Google, they like to introduce something and it's not, you know, it's not perfect out of the gate. It's not working well. And I think what makes Apple TV so nice is that it's so simple. It's almost the concept with Apple where, you know, less is more.
Well, and again, you hate to sound like a broken record, and I get accused enough of being an Apple fanboy, but Steve Jobs, more often than not, gets it right. When he announced Apple TV, everybody was disappointed. Everybody says it was limited. Where is all this other content? Steve Jobs went up at the D conference and said, this is a tough game to get into. These people don't know what they're doing. It's hard to put deals together. Google comes out guns blazing weeks later. Oh, we're going to have everything, the world of video at your fingertips. And then it comes out and it's a complete disaster, as every content provider out there blocks the content because Google tried to do an end around and just be able to put it up there without deals in place. And now it's become a disaster. So Apple TV looked to be a joke compared to Google TV, and it's now the better product because Steve obviously was right saying, hey, we'd like to do better. But we're in that whole thing, as we've discussed time and time again in this podcast, the people who own the content still long for 1960s era business models and are really slow to do these other things. So we're still probably years away from it getting sorted out, but it was interesting to see that play out, especially when people were so excited about what Google was going to offer and they just couldn't pull it off. It fell apart.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what comes up with Apple TV and updates and all that. But yeah, that's a busy year for Apple in 2010. I mean, they've made huge profits. They've unleashed new products. Once again, we completely forgot about the MacBook Air, but we're sort of...
Yeah, there was several other things. There was the Mac Lion having the iOS features, the Mac App Store is about to launch within the next couple weeks, but we could go on all night and we want to get to some of our favorite apps of the year. So we'll discuss all those other things, continue to discuss them in the new year.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to list some of the top apps on my phone right now that I just use daily and I can't stop using them. This is a mix of some older and some newer apps. I'm just going to list them right now. Netflix. I love Netflix. It lets me resume my videos no matter where I am using any device. Words with Friends. I never was really into Scrabble, but I've become addicted to this game. Dropbox is hands down amazing for getting access to my files. Simple Note, I actually heard this from Justin. Great app for getting access to your notes. Boxcar, I've started using Boxcar a lot to get notifications for emails. Skype is a no-brainer. Simply Tweet, it's one of the best Twitter iPhone applications out there, if not the best. WhatsApp, a cross-platform messaging application. AccuRadio, one of my favorite radio apps and Viber, which we covered extensively previously. And those are just some of my favorite apps that I've used for 2010. And I look forward to adding to that list in 2011.
Yeah, I'll second several of those apps. Just quickly, a lot of those were on my list. Netflix is just a killer app. You do have to pay the subscription, but their handling of the video is so well done. Dropbox, if you don't have Dropbox on the phone right now, you obviously just have not heard of it, or you have no need to access any of your other files. Dropbox, I mean, Apple should just buy them, because it's just amazing what you can now do on your phone because of Dropbox. And now that Apple has allowed other apps to go in and out, now that you can just open things in different things, it just makes it super cool. Simple Note, again, great free note-taking app with backup. Another app that I would add to that, if you need something a little more, is I use a text editor now called Elements, which actually syncs with Dropbox. So if you want to go away from Simple Note, you can just have all text files saved in your Dropbox. And what I like about that is they're saved as plain text files. They're instantly synced right to your Mac or any computer running Dropbox. So then if you go in your Finder and want to search a note or anything, you just have that perfect synchronization. The other thing that's nice about Elements is it supports Markdown, which is a markup language that allows you to easily convert text into HTML. They allow you to write in Markdown and preview it. It also has nice things like word counts and different things, a lot of options for kind of sharing and getting your work out there. So if you're a little more serious about writing on the phone and you want something a little bit beyond notes, Elements is a killer app. It's funny you mentioned SimplyTweet. We've mentioned it so many different times on the podcast. I love SimplyTweet, but it's almost unusable for me now because of this new trend in apps. We first mentioned it with Uber Twitter, where you could get to links so much quicker. So now I find it so annoying on SimplyTweet to actually have to click on the tweet, then it opens it up to a new window. Then you got to click on the link. It opens up to a new window. So I've actually been using Twitterlater lately that actually has everything right on the main screen. So when there's a link in a tweet, it just has this little link icon, and then you can do it. Now, knowing SimplyTweet as well as I do, if enough people want that feature, I'm sure he'll build it in, because that's the most updated Twitter app. But right now, you might want to check out Twitterlater if you like what I'm describing there about getting to things quicker. And Viber, you are absolutely right. That's going to be a Skype killer if they keep improving, because the quality is phenomenal. You don't have to have the app running in the background killing your battery like Skype. You just get a push notification when somebody's calling you. And again, you don't even have to register a username or anything. It just finds people who are also in your address book. There was a little glitch initially with them where if your number was formatted a little weird, it might not recognize it, but they've taken care of that. So if you haven't tried Viber, it's free. Excellent for making phone calls. A couple other ones that I'll add quickly. This is especially important because of everything that's happened in the last few weeks with Gawker having passwords hacked. McDonald's has had your password hacked. 1Password for the Mac and iPhone. It's going to cost you $10 for the iPhone app. It's going to cost you, I think, $30 for the Mac app, but they update for free all the time. It's a bit of an investment, but I highly recommend it. It allows you to create 40-character huge, like CIA-level type passwords practically. You have a different password for every single site, but then you can just remember your one master password, change that every so many months for extra safety if you're worried. But then any site you go to, not only do you have this super secure password, but it makes it easy. So when you get to a site that you have to type in your password, you don't type in the password. You just hit the little 1Password logo. It fills in that super high-end password for you automatically. So it's actually quicker and more secure. And if something like Gawker or somebody gets your password, because your password is different for every single site, you're not opening up your life to a hack, which a lot of people have experienced lately. So definitely get 1Password for your Mac. And the iPhone, let me think of a couple other ones. Two other things that if you're big into reading on your iPhone, Reader is an RSS reader. I've literally tried them all because I'm so obsessed with RSS, and it's by far the fastest. I follow hundreds of websites, and every time I launch the app each day, there are thousands of new posts, and it loads within seconds, and I can view, and I'm through 1,000 posts in 5 or 10 minutes. So that's the killer one, far as I'm concerned, to get. And then Instapaper, I think I've mentioned it before. Instapaper works with almost any web browser, almost all the Twitter clients. And basically every time you find an article on the web or in an email or anywhere, you find something you want to read, but you don't have time to read that second, you click the bookmarklet or you click the part of the Twitter app that allows it. It sends it over to Instapaper. And then next time you're on your phone, you launch the Instapaper app. And then you have a nice list of all the articles you want to read. And the other nice thing about it is it takes out all the formatting from the website, strips out all the ads, and just gives you a nice plain background with a nice font and makes it really easy to read. So if you do like to follow a lot of news, a lot of blogs, and like to read on your iPhone, Instapaper is a killer app. And I think I can't... those are kind of my favorite. I could go on forever. There's
yeah, there's, I mean, tons. Obviously, you probably have, what, 300,000 other apps you want to share?
I have a couple hundred apps on my phone, and there's probably another 20 I could recommend. I've heard all the comments. Every week I get replies saying, oh, I love the app recommendations. So when we do come back in 2011, we're going to continue to even focus more on the apps. We're going to do some interviews with developers. We're going to have some more detailed reviews of the apps, and we'll just keep bringing you the apps because I know that's what people want. So that's kind of like my main favorite can't live without type of apps, and we'll keep sharing them with you when we return in 2011.
Yeah, for sure. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the iPhone podcast. You know, we were off to a good start. We've had some patches in 2010, but we've listened to your feedback. Thank you so much. Please rate us in iTunes. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or following us on Twitter. You can follow me at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and you can follow Justin at twitter.com/JustinLuey. That's LUEY. So yeah, we'll be back early next year with regular weekly shows. Thanks again for an awesome first year of the iPhone podcast. Justin, it's been great. I think we've had a lot of fun talking on this podcast. I've discovered a lot of new apps. It's been great. And I just, you know, thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks again, everybody. It has been a lot of fun. Keep hitting me back with all the feedback. As Gary said there on Twitter, my email address is justin@theiphonepodcast.com. If you have questions, concerns, or any type of feedback, I appreciate it. Even some people email me for tips on certain things, and if I can help, I'm happy to do it. And I hope everybody enjoys their holidays, and we'll be back in the probably about the middle of January next year, and then we'll have a regular scheduled show and keep improving and keep using your ideas. And again, just thanks for listening, and see you next year.
Thank you again, everyone.